Auto Line After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone, passion for excellence. Chevrolet, the all-new Chevrolet Cruze. Get used to more. Dow Automotive Systems, improving durability and increasing design flexibility with Betamate structural adhesives at DowBetamate.com. And by Hyundai. Experience the 2011 Hyundai Sonata today at HyundaiSonata.com.
This is Autoline After Hours with Peter DiLorenzo, episode 82 for Thursday, December 9th, 2010. Supersonic.
Watch Autoline After Hours live at AutolineDetroit.tv every Thursday at 7 p.m. Eastern or 2400 hours GMT. You can subscribe to this podcast for free by searching for Autoline After Hours in the iTunes Store.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back. Another scintillating episode of Autoline After Hours. Joining me tonight is Mr. Scott Burgess from the Detroit News.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Scott, how are you doing?
Well.
Just back from San Diego.
Yeah, I just drove the Explorer.
Yeah, we'll talk about that, or as much as you can. And Mr. Keith Naughton from Bloomberg.
Hey, Peter.
How are you?
Just fine, thanks.
Great. To our viewers, you probably recognize Keith's name from his stint at Newsweek.
Yep.
But you've been with Bloomberg for what?
Almost 2 years now.
Almost 2 years, yeah. One of the my favorite pieces you did for Newsweek is when you embedded with General Motors before the 16.
Yep, came. I followed that for a year. That was a blast.
That was fun.
A lot of time with Lutz on that.
Yeah, magnificent car and all that stuff. It was cool.
One of the greats.
So, let's see. Scott, you covered this today. Let's talk about this J.D. Power, this customer loyalty thing where Ford and Honda emerged on top. And then this is for returning customers, is that it?
It was based on loyalty and the car that they owned, what did they trade in, what did they get. And J.D. Power has been doing a study for 8 years. It's the first time Ford has ever been at the top. Their number came in at 62%, which tied with Honda. And industry average for customer loyalty is 48%. So Chevrolet was the only other American brand to go above the industry average. You had your usual suspects. You had Toyota, Lexus, a number of others that were right below at around 60%. Kia.
Yeah, that was the big news. Kia.
Yeah, was the one that jumped 21%.
Wow.
And they finished, I think, around 58% with customer loyalty. And the people at J.D. Power said they weren't that surprised with the Kia jump, that it's been doing a lot of things right. The other big news was coming out of that was that buyers, one of the more important things now is fun to drive.
Yeah, I was going to say, finally, this is kind of bubbling up. I mean, as enthusiasts, we always say, fun to drive. It's got to be fun to drive. But now it's kind of bubbling up from the general populace, which is interesting.
Well, I mean, you know, if Toyota is falling somewhat in all of these rankings, Toyota's never been known as a fun-to-drive car, right? So it shows not just that Toyota's slipping, but it shows that maybe priorities are changing for people. And I know we live in practical times, but people still like to have a life. And so why not have a little fun while you're at it?
It ranked, fun to drive ranked higher than fuel economy, mm-hmm. and ranked higher than residual values. And one of the things that it seems to be happening is you see the quality of vehicles all getting better. So the gap between the best and the worst is not nearly as much as it used to be. So now you're going to have different discerning factors.
Yeah, and I think the most powerful factors, design, mm-hmm. and fun to drive. You know, people have to be emotionally drawn into these products. That is design.
Right.
And when you commoditize all this, and like you said, quality is all pretty much the same, then people are going to be, you know, they're going to be drawn in by design, which is why the whole design thing is growing in importance by the day.
Well, styling is number two, but number one is seat configuration.
So we were coupled.
Just when we were starting to get excited.
And this is like, really? Really high level here, but no.
And I think because there's no surprises from my last car. The seat was really kind of nice, and I tried the new one, and it was good too, so I'm going to get another one. Jesus,
so it's
how
they tuck and fold and do half gainers? Is that it?
The number of people that you can also carry.
Right.
You know, so if you want the three-row and they provide a three-row, then... Wow. You might stick with it, but
well, that's very practical.
It sucks all the fun right out.
It really does.
Yeah, just what we were saying. That hey, this is a revelation. It's a revelation. Fun to drive is bubbling up. No, but,
you know, I do think you said fuel economy fell, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, this town, this industry has been gripped by fuel economy first after gas prices went up, and then when the recession hit. I think if you make fuel economy your god and your only priority, you commoditize the entire industry. There's nothing left. Everybody will just go for the best fuel economy, and you end up with a bunch of soulless products.
Well, I mean, and the way legislation is going, we are moving towards this fuel economy model. And, you know, my attitude on that is let the customer decide. You know, and if it's $4.50 a gallon, and you want to drive a Mustang, then you should be able to drive a Mustang.
And guess what? SUVs and pickups drove that nice sales increase in November. So what are the customers deciding with gas staying below $3 a gallon for such a long stretch?
Yeah, they're deciding, well, we like bigger and roomier. And
what does seat configuration have to do with? Do you think they're really talking about seat configuration?
I think they're talking about size of the vehicle.
Yeah. It talks about how many people can I seat is what that is getting to, not, you know, can I get a two-seater? You know, so yeah,
interesting.
It's a culture. It's a culture of bigness.
Well, you know, I mean, with cafe, and now people, no one is ever satisfied with whatever the cafe number is. And so there's already the 60 mile per gallon. I mean, 40mpg.org had to change its name to 60mpg.org because as soon as they get the 40, well, that's not enough. Right. And, you know, California is already talking about, well, we're going to change whatever the federal numbers are so that we can go ahead of it. And once again, you'll have two different markets set up. And
I think CAFE is total BS. I think.
I mean, the biggest byproduct of CAFE the first time around were SUVs.
Right. To get around the.
Well, I want better fuel economy. Everybody wants better fuel economy.
Well, everybody
that's
wants.
That's an easy one. But I don't think they want to give up the vehicle driving.
Everybody will say the worst thing in the business, you know, when you get into these focus groups, people tell the moderators what they think they want to hear.
Right.
You know, they say, well, what do you think is important in a car? And I say, well, safety, fuel economy, blah, blah, blah. And then you look at the people as they leave and go out in the parking lot and they're driving, you know, like Mustangs and whatever, you know. The whole thing about CAFE drives me crazy because, you know, 2 years ago when gas spiked, you know, it did more for move the country toward fuel economy than any CAFE standard. If people knew today that gas would never fall below $4 a gallon no matter what, and everyone made their next car choice based on that, things would kind of even out. You know, the market for high fuel economy would be there. But right now, we've got all these high fuel economy vehicles just about to hit.
Well, I think the Nissan Leaf will be an absolute referendum on the importance of fuel economy, because that's the ultimate sacrifice for fuel economy car. I mean, you know, I was talking to a couple of people last week who are among the journalists who are driving them, and they're each talking about how they tried to figure out how far they could get, and each were both worried about getting home, you know, which obviously you don't have that with a Volt or a Prius.
I know. John was talking about that last week. He had a Leaf, and at 110 volt, it wouldn't charge overnight.
Right. Yep. Yeah, and so that will be a good test. I mean, obviously, Carlos Ghosn has very high expectations for the sales volume
of
that car.
Oh, he is all in.
But that will be a good test of what the customer will abide.
Bear.
Yeah. Yep. So
what can you talk about? Can you talk about much about the Explorer or not?
You can't mention drive impressions.
Oh, okay, never mind. But she liked it, generally.
But the car is, we've seen the car. We know what it looks like. We know how it's, the seats are configured, right?
Well, you know, one of the things that I was really surprised with was that it's 5 inches wider.
Mm.
And they just came out with mileage numbers today. I think they officially announced it. And, I mean, it gets really good gas mileage. It's a 7-passenger vehicle.
It's wider, it's longer, and it's 100 pounds lighter.
Yeah.
That's the amazing thing. 95 pounds lighter.
One of the things I found really interesting is that I really think that we're seeing the end of body-on-frame SUVs. I think they're gone.
Yep.
I talked with the chief engineer, Jim Holland, for the Explorer, and he said if they actually mapped it out, if they would have built the exact same Explorer with body-on-frame, and it would have weighed 500 pounds more.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a good 2 miles per gallon.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
But Durango is unibody. Jeep Grand Cherokee's unibody, Explorer's unibody. I mean, Range Rover's unibody.
Right.
And
I think Explorer's going to be a huge hit. I really do.
I still don't know about the 2-liter, the EcoBoost version.
Well,
the towing, it doesn't have any towing, really. I think they're saying 2,000 pounds. But more importantly, I don't know how many people are going to pay a premium for a smaller engine.
That's exactly right, Scott. That's the test.
And they're already undergoing that with the EcoBoost V6 in the F-150.
Mm-hmm.
You can pay a premium. The most expensive engine is the smallest.
But that one's not out yet either. So you know, that comes out next year,
too. And who knows? I mean, if gas is high, yeah, you'll pay.
Perhaps. Maybe it's a hedge against that.
Yeah.
But I think the American ethos of bigger is better is going to have a very hard time paying more for a smaller engine, even if it gets you better fuel.
And I've heard lots of people before say, well, I got the V6 because it's going to be more durable. It's not true, but I've heard that again and again. I've heard people do that in midsize sedans. You know, I'm just going to get the V6 because, you know, it's a little bit better engine.
Really?
Yes.
Wow. I wouldn't
Fewer cylinders, fewer pistons, fewer
they work
parts
harder
to go wrong.
Or whatever the logic is behind that.
So we hear that Volkswagen, who uses a Chrysler minivan, is rethinking the whole microbus thing. They brought out a fantastic concept, as we remember, probably, 5 or 6 years ago or more,
mm-hmm.
of the microbus.
It was great.
It was fabulous. And they quietly did away with it, didn't do anything with it. Now they're rethinking it. Now they're kind of realizing that putting their emblems on a Chrysler van doesn't really work. And so that's supposedly on the table.
We loved that concept at Newsweek. We did a huge article about it, huge call-outs. And back in those days, the U.S. side of the house at VW really wanted to do that.
No, it was absolutely spot on.
It was the new Beetle, you know, redo, except with bigger profit margins.
Yeah, it had as much of an impact
like?
As that Concept One did.
Yeah, it did. It was huge. And remember, it was down in the basement. That's when VW first went downstairs at the Detroit Auto Show. And that just created crowds down those escalators to see that thing. It was
They
great.
Should bring it. No question. Just bring that thing in. Build it and make sure it has a little table in there with an atlas on top of the table. And
well, yeah, but you said it should have an air-cooled engine.
Well, you know.
And rusty floorboards.
Well, it would also, you think about it, Volkswagen has been cutting a lot of personality out of their vehicles, and this would allow them a chance to have something completely different in the marketplace.
Yeah, well, they went to the lowest common denominator with the basic version of the new Jetta.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, obviously, you can order a Jetta to get it back to where it should be. But, yeah, it would help them a great deal. I absolutely believe it.
And it could put a lot of buzz around there because they're going to – the midsize sedan, when that comes, we'll see that in Detroit.
Right.
The one from Tennessee.
Right. And I don't have real high expectations for it. It's not going to be a Passat.
And you know, VW has grand plans for the United States.
Grand plans, yeah. 800,000 vehicles by 2018.
Right now, the United States.
There it is.
There it is. It was fantastic. I love that vehicle. You know, right now, the United States for VW is what China is for Ford. You know, they're a bit player, outsold by Hyundai. And oh, that's probably an insult to Hyundai. And
your interior was closed.
Look at that. That, you know, build it.
Yeah.
That's what we said.
No balls. No guts, no glory. They should have done it. Now
but that's what they need if they want to get these sorts of incredible volumes that they're talking about. That's what puts them back on the map.
Yeah, and those consumers are going to be dying off pretty soon, the ones that really want that. So,
yeah, they really missed a window.
There's your table right there, Scott.
Yep.
Yeah. We're probably a beat behind on this video, but it is really a great car.
We also hear Volkswagen is bringing the Golf R to the U.S. in 2012. All-wheel drive and way over 200 horsepower, so we'll see how that does. Interesting. The other news within the Volkswagen conglomerate is, and I've written about this, is how are they going to coexist or absorb Porsche into the organization? And that was on the table internally. And now word is filtering out that Porsche has won a huge battle within the Volkswagen empire in that they are going to be in charge of, let's see, Porsche's going to be in charge of sports cars, which wasn't automatic. Boy.
So they do all of Audi's sports cars then?
Yeah, so
R's and S's. And, yeah.
They will develop Volkswagen's modular standard matrix that will underpin the Porsche Panamera and future Bentleys, and also sports cars. Audi was angling to do the sports cars.
I'll bet.
And when it's sports cars, it's mid and rear engined, front, mid, and rear engine. That means Porsche, Audi, Lamborghini. And Volkswagen's basically going to do Audis.
Non-sports car Audis.
Yeah. So this was a big internal battle within the Volkswagen group. And clearly, I think they made the right move. Yeah. I mean, they put Porsche in charge of sports cars.
Though VW did a heck of a job with Bentley.
Yeah, they did.
And to hand that over to Porsche is...
Well, Porsche did a... You know, even though I poo-pooed it, once I drove it, I shut up. The Panamera, it did a great job on the Panamera, the way it drives, not the way it looks. But yeah, it's a quarter past, and we need to thank one of our sponsors, which is Chevrolet Cruze. Now, Cruze, you guys driven the Cruze, right? It's an impressive vehicle structurally, dynamically. I won't even mention previous Chevy small cars because it's an insult to the Cruze. Mm-hmm. But we really appreciate them being on board. And check them out at Chevrolet.com/Cruze. And, you know, we love the Cruze. Can't wait for the performance version. What are they going to call it? I don't remember. Is it an RS or something?
SS?
No. I don't think it's the SS. But anyway, check it out. Chevrolet.com/Cruze. That's Cruze, in case you were wondering. All righty. So, another Porsche news. Detroit Auto Show. What are they going to show? I got a mind on what they're going to show. Porsche, for our viewers, Porsche walked away from the Detroit show 3 years ago. Said it wasn't important. And, you know, really, for their customers, it isn't. But these manufacturers come to the Detroit show for the media.
Right.
Because, you know, L.A. show's great, New York and everything, but this is where all the media are. And so to walk away from the Detroit show was kind of a lame gesture. But they're back, and they say they're going to have a surprise for us. So what do you think it's going to be?
Oh, my gosh. I don't know. You know, what is to show?
I think it's going to be the production version of the 918, the new supercar hybrid electric $650,000 supercar. I think they're going to show the production version. I don't know what else they could show.
Well, that would generate buzz.
Yeah. What do you think, Scott? Do you think that's good?
I don't know. I think that it could be something in the green category. I know in Germany there's a lot of push to be greener. And so that could be it, though, at $650,000. It just costs a lot of green.
Yeah. What do you think about the judge holding Toyota's feet to the fire? They're, you know, Toyota's bid to dismiss these lawsuits, and the judge said no, they can go forward.
Yeah.
What do you think of that?
Toyota is...
They are...
They can't buy a break at the moment.
No, their image has been...
And it's easier to take a tough decision on Toyota at the moment than it might have been in the past.
But this is significant.
Well, how long did Ford... I mean, have they settled all the Firestone suits?
The rollover? No. I think that lives on. So, you know, that can take years, decades. And they can still pop up later on. So, you know, these things take on a life of their own.
What do you think the most significant story of the year has been, Keith, in this business?
You know, I think it has been, I want to say Detroit's, but it's primarily, I think, GM and Ford's.
Resurgence.
Turnaround, or turnaround in progress, whatever you want to call it. I really think if you go a year ago this time, few people would have thought there would still be three automakers in Detroit, two of them pretty healthy and another one trying to get there. You know, this town was given up for dead. Those companies were given up for dead. And the fact that they are not only not dead, but thriving. Ford is the most profitable automaker in the world, period. More profitable than VW. More profitable than Toyota. Who would have thought that 2 years ago when Alan Mulally was trooping to Washington? Seriously, how could that have happened? I can't think of a bigger auto story in the world.
What do you think, Scott?
Well, I agree. I think that the absolute low point for the auto industry were the congressional hearings.
Right.
I think those were lower than when they went through bankruptcy.
I agree.
No, absolutely, I agree.
They were a laughing stock.
And the whole jet pool.
Right.
I think that if there were a manufacturer of the year, GM, probably with the lineup of vehicles that it's come out with, from its heavy-duty pickup trucks earlier in the year, all the way through the Cruise and delivering the Volt. They'd been promising that thing since...
3 years.
Yeah, what, 1892, they said they were going to come out with this vehicle. And Ford is another one, and the other manufacturer I think that's had a stellar year has been Hyundai.
Mm-hmm.
I think the Sonata is just beautiful, and it's a really nice car, and I think that car has legitimized that brand in the eye of a lot of consumers.
Right, and you know, Hyundai and Ford seem to have taken most advantage
Absolutely.
Of Toyota's troubles, and the biggest surprise in all of that is that Honda didn't. You know, so
Honda has been a huge disappointment.
Honda has not gained at the expense of Toyota, which who would have thought? I mean, that was always the default for Toyota buyers. You would have thought, but instead they were buying Hyundais and they were buying Fords. Again, nobody would have predicted that 2 years ago.
I will give credit. I was talking with James Bell from Auto Pacific, and last year at the end of the Detroit Auto Show, or this year at the end of the Detroit Auto Show. He actually said that he thought that Ford could outsell Toyota this year. And they're going to.
They're going to in the U.S., absolutely.
And he was talking about U.S. sales. And I kind of laughed when he said it.
Right.
And that was before all of the acceleration issues and everything else. And, I mean, Toyota's lost market share this year. Mm-hmm. And I think their sales are up overall through November maybe 1%. The market's 11%. Ford is 23%.
Yeah, it's really impressive. And the contrast couldn't be greater. And so I guess the flip side of the big story of the year would have to be Toyota.
Yeah, Toyota's image crash has been stupefying, really, to watch. I mean, and then all of a sudden when people step back, they say, oh, image really does matter, doesn't it?
Well, and you learned... how much the quality piece of Toyota's image overrode everything else.
Yeah.
And as soon as that was assailed or called into question by its own actions, everything began crumbling. And they can't seem to put Humpty Dumpty back together again.
Well, certainly not with any sort of speed. This is going to be a while. And, you know, besides the Ford story, which I think is the most significant, where is Hyundai going to go? And they're talking about a new network for their luxury cars, which will be called the Genesis Network. But,
you know. Well, and they're on, you know, they are on the Toyota, you know, glide path of a couple of decades ago, but they're moving at Mach speed.
Well, the difference is they've got actual design.
Well, you know, they no longer copy anybody else. They're not giving you bad versions or cheaper versions of a Lexus.
Right.
I mean, they're giving you original designs, and whether it be Sonata, Elantra is also, I mean, it looks like a little Sonata.
The Equus, that's not original. Maybe the next one will be, but Sonata and Elantra definitely. But they can always, they seem to always be teetering on the edge of going off a little bit.
But they learn from their mistakes much faster. Think how long it took Toyota to figure out a full-size pickup truck. And maybe they never really did. But, I mean, it took over a decade of doing, you know, half a loaf, three-quarters of a loaf before they finally came up with the full. Well, Hyundai gets it wrong once, and the next time out, they've got it right. And many times they get it right the first swing.
Yeah.
It's pretty incredible.
Well, you know, another thing about Ford, which I find really interesting, is they've kind of bucked the tradition of if they have a new improvement, they just put it in. They don't care where it is in the cycle of things. They don't match powertrains to the redesign of the exteriors. They haven't done that with a number of vehicles, including the F-150 and the Mustang. And, you know, they just go at a pace where they... continually improving,
right?
And Sync is so much better than any other kind of telematic system.
Right. They've got a real lead there, and they put this stuff in because they want to keep everything fresh, and they realize that's, you know, the shelf life of new products is shorter and shorter, and if they don't refresh with something, a powertrain, a Sync 2.0, then they'll lose their profit margin.
They're acting like a technology company that manufactures cars.
Right.
And that's a huge difference. You know, that you could see cars that would go years without changing, and they always are changing those things.
Right.
I mean, if you'd have thought a 2010 Mustang, brand new GT, right, it barely has more horsepower than a 2011 V6
right,
Mustang.
I think sometimes that's part of the Mullally mindset that he brought. There he was out in Seattle with Boeing, closer to the tech world than to the manufacturing world. And now he goes to CES every year, and, you know, he's really pushed Ford in that direction. It was something that had started already, obviously, but he's really sort of galloped that forward. And, you know, I think Sync makes Ford seem like the tech company now.
Mm-hmm.
Again, something we never would have thought a few years back.
Well, that and, you know, make no mistake, Ford not taking any of the big bailout money. They took some. It's huge for their image. And I think it's played a huge role in the sales, too.
Every time, today I wrote about, you know, they're putting $600 million into the Louisville plant
to
build the new Escape. They're going to add...
by the way, is fabulous.
And they're going to add 1,800 workers. And so every time I write something like that about Ford, I get all this email from people citing, you know, my next car is a Ford, or I bought a Ford because they didn't take the money. And you know, I think that does get people in. But if they got in there and they saw the showroom and it was filled with 1979 Fords, they'd run out screaming, but it's not. And then they buy the cars and they actually hang together and they're durable, and all of a sudden they have new customers.
Yeah, and I think all due respect to the Chevy Cruze people who are nice enough to sponsor this show, I think that Ford Focus is going to be absolutely sensational.
No,
in this market. It's going to be the new mainstream product in the U.S. market.
And I think it was very clever putting Sync into the Focus first, you know, and sort of, you know, making the technology bottom up instead of top down. I think that brought them a lot of new buyers, and it gave them a lead because they got the volume. They weren't putting it in a, you know, 20,000 unit luxury car. They were putting it in a 200,000 unit, you know, everyman's car. And
They sold well over a million units of Sync.
And I think, you know, the new iteration with the MyFord Touch is really attractive. I mean, they sort of took, you know, the enhancements they had in the IP on the hybrid, which looks so great with the growing trees. They took those graphics, which are so pleasing, and they turned it into a touchscreen. And it's just, you know, it's so intuitive, so easy to use.
Yeah, we've been talking about this. A lot of viewers have not
found that,
checked it out yet.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
you, when you do, it's dramatic.
Yeah, and that's great. I mean, you know, the thumb controls on the steering wheels now, even when you switch out, like, say, the tack, so you can get another piece of information on the IP, it's so easy, and it's so cool to watch. And just the way they do the animation, it's really gorgeous.
Well, and the genius behind that also is the redundancy, that if you want to do it with your thumbs, you can. If you want to do it by voice, you can. If you want to do it on the touch screen on the center stack, you can do that. And instead of the thing that everybody hated about the iDrive was it was so regimented in the way you had to do it. And as Americans, we want only to do it the way we do it.
Right. And I guess I have found, particularly the voice controls on Sync, much less intimidating than other voice-activated systems.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't scold you if you mess up. You know, it helps you, you know? And I just find it real easy to use.
Okay, well, I'm going to take another little break here, and we're going to thank another one of our sponsors, Dow Automotive Systems. With their DowBetaMate.com, their product that it's a structural adhesive, ideal for use in door hood, deck lid flanges, engine compartments, cockpits, roof panels, rails, and other load-bearing members. And I guess it's good stuff within the industry. There's a lot of buzz around it. So if you're curious, check out DowBetaMate.com. And thanks to them for being on board with us. You know, one thing, I spent some time talking to these designers. We're talking about MyTouch. Eventually, well, you've seen the latest Samsung LED TVs there. Eventually, you know, when we get in a car, there will just be a panel, the full width of the where you sit,
and like it'll LCD.
Yeah, it'll be LCD, and it'll be that thin. Mm. And what they're working on now, which is exciting to me, is the future cars, not too distant future, all that stuff underneath the dash, they're taking hundreds of pounds out of there.
Sure.
But
paper thin.
Yeah.
Yep.
So, you know,
you end up with an iPad dashboard is what you have.
And that's what's going to be there. It's going to be fascinating.
It will be really cool.
How about Chevy Aveo is now going to be the Sonic. And it's going to be built out in Lake Orion. And apparently, I think GM got tired. Now, globally, Aveo is still used, but GM got tired of people not pronouncing it here, Chevrolet. Aveo.
What are the various pronunciations?
Aveo. Aveo. So it's going to be Sonic, and boy, it's just a natural co-promotion with Sonic hamburgers, don't you think?
Yeah, it is.
Drive-ins. I mean, there it is.
Yep. Sonic, okay.
Actually, the R version or whatever, their performance version of it is really pretty trick-looking.
They're not going to call it the Super?
Supersonic.
Well, it's a sharp-looking car. It certainly doesn't look like an Aveo. So,
no, it's more substantial. It's wider. It's chunkier. It's more aggressive. And yeah, it'd be great if they did something with Sonic drive-ins, like I don't know what. But.
Or hedgehogs. You get a free hedgehog if you purchase the
that
Sonic.
Would be another cross-promotional opportunity. No, it looks cool.
I don't know where they come up with the names of cars. You know, I'm sure that there's lots of thought and lots of things that go into it. But, you know, from the bowels of the Rensen comes the word Sonic. And
you know, and it costs tens of millions of dollars to try and establish these names. You know the story better than I do, Peter.
Yeah.
So when you give up on a name, you really got to be ready to spend a lot of dough to create a new one.
Yeah, I actually know how that name came about. That's for another show. That came from outside the company.
At least it's a real word.
Yeah.
You know?
I like those, like Tiguan or...
Yeah. Well, Volkswagen...
That's
clearly
a whole other
thing. They have a naming process that defies explanation.
Well, that's kind of like the German nationality with cars. Their attitude is, we know what's best for you and you will like it. Yeah. You know, it's funny how the personality, the nationalities of the car companies come through. But the Germans, it's just like... Well, we know what's best for you, and as soon as you learn to like it.
Touareg sounds completely normal to them.
Yeah. So, but, I think it's probably a good move for Chevrolet. I can't say that Aveo has this deep-seated into the American consumer consciousness. So if you're going to change it with an all-new look and feel for the product.
Well, it's not like they're getting rid of Civic.
Right. Yeah. And sometimes, clearly names, Edsel, whatever, have so much baggage that it costs more to try and keep them going than to change.
And I don't think Aveo really didn't have anything. It didn't have much baggage. It didn't have, it was just like, yeah, whatever.
This is a more substantial car that they come up with here. And if Aveo has anything, it connoted cheap. And maybe they want to get away from cheap because they want to say that, a B car, a subcompact, doesn't have to be a cheap car. It can be a substantial car that you would desire. And maybe that's where Sonic comes in. I don't know. I'll leave it to them.
Yeah, you bring up a good point. When you try to relaunch a nameplate or... seat a nameplate in the American consumer consciousness, it takes so much money.
Right.
I mean, a staggering amount of money. Now, when Alan Mulally got to Ford, he didn't understand why they didn't have a Taurus.
Right.
Because when you get outside of Detroit, we had moved beyond Taurus, or Ford did, and he said, well, wait a minute, you don't have a Taurus.
Right. And it had great brand recognition in his view of the world, and it did. Actually, but
they have a Taurus now.
Yes, they do.
It's doing just fine, thank you. So, but I wonder at Ford if they regret the decision to go MK with Lincoln because it is so hard to know the nomenclature.
Well, I've written about that. I mean, come on, they have Continental. It's a great name. Maybe people associate town car with delivery trade.
Airport shuttle.
But Continental was a great name.
It is a great name.
So I wouldn't be surprised if they didn't bring it back on a concept, or it'll be the Continental MK 12 or something like
MKC.
That.
MKC.
I've always had problems with the alphanumerics. I guess BMW and Mercedes can pull them off, but even maybe it's always the struggling luxury brands. Even years ago when Acura gave up on Legend, which I think is the most classic luxury car name you could ever have.
But Cadillac did it too, and they'll argue, well, we couldn't have gone in our new direction, art and science with Cadillac, if we had Brougham. Although I loved Eldorado. I don't know what was wrong with that. And Coupe de Ville, in American lore, it's still big. But I guess, now to go back wouldn't make any sense.
Right. Right. But I wonder along with you, Peter, if the MK nomenclature will survive as Ford tries to fix Lincoln.
Yeah, and that's... to me, going to be the most interesting thing to watch, the story over the next 3 years in the domestic industry, is the transformation of Lincoln.
Yeah, because that's where the work needs to be done.
Absolutely. And a lot of work.
I mean, they're getting rid of Mercury to create room for Lincoln.
Right.
And so...
a serious Lincoln, yeah.
Yeah. And so... let's see what they can do.
Right. But the reason they hung on to Mercury as long as they did, as weak as it was because it had greater volume than Lincoln did.
It was outselling it, yeah.
And their dealers needed it. So now they take that volume away from the dealers. They tell the dealers, we need one-third fewer of you. And by the way, spend $2 million upgrading your stores on the come. Not on what we can offer you right now, but on the promise of a better future. That's a hard sell, man.
Yeah, it's going to be a painful transition.
And where do those Mercury customers go? Do they go into Lincoln or do they go into Ford?
I think they think they're going into Ford because Ford has taken their cars upmarket. They, mm-hmm. they get higher prices for them. They put things like sync into them. So the difference, that good, better, best ladder that they had from Sears, it didn't wash anymore because all of a sudden the good one was better than it used to be. So it just had encroached on the better one's turf. So now, you know, why would you buy a car just for, you know, what, grill and taillights when you could just go to Ford and get the same?
Well, let's not forget, if we set the Wayback Machine to when Saturn was hot, but GM didn't arrange for them to get new product.
Yeah, they starved.
And GM's internal rationale is, well, when they grow out of Saturn, they'll go buy Oldsmobiles. So that didn't work so much. But
Saturn and Oldsmobile both ended up in the same place.
Yeah, but this is different. We'll see. It's going to be painful. But we are going to have a unique viewing point on basically the birthing of a brand new car company, because this, what Lincoln has coming, bears no resemblance to what they have now. Right. So it's going to be very interesting.
And that's good.
Yeah. Well, I mean, some of their stuff now is fine, but fine doesn't cut it in this market, especially in the luxury segment. And if they ever want to grow Lincoln and take it, you know, eventually to China, they got to reinvent the wheel. So, Scott, what have you driven lately that you can talk about?
Well, lots of things. When I was out for the LA show, I started off in San Francisco with the Chrysler Dodge presentation and drove a Durango down to LA. I was really blown away by that car. I'm really impressed.
It's too bad you can't talk about how you, what you think of the Explorer versus.
That's for another show, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, the couple of things that I really, one is Dodge has really come through on the interiors.
Well, they had to. They had nowhere to go but up.
You know, and we're talking about the story of the year. I think the story of next year is going to be Chrysler overall and the products that we're seeing coming out of them. I mean, I think that this past year, the Jeep Grand Cherokee, you could hear the collective sigh of relief from journalists as they were getting inside of it, because you're like, thank God, this thing is really nice. And the Durango continued that. It's a really nice vehicle. There's a couple things I don't like. I don't like that Uconnect system, but the new one that they've put in the Dodge Journey and the Charger, that's a really nice system, and it kind of gets rid of all the flaws that you saw before.
Maybe you could compare the Durango to the Grand Cherokee. If I'm a buyer of a sport utility vehicle,
Grand Cherokee, if you want to go off road, the Durango, if you want to tow something. And I think that's one place where the Durango may win some former Explorer customers, is 7,400 pounds. You can still get a V8 in a Durango.
Durango, yeah.
So in the 5.7, it's the first time I think they're using the four valves will shut off.
Oh, yeah.
Was that MCD is the system for Chrysler?
Yeah.
It's going to be on. It's on the 5.7. And that engine's a hoot. And that car, you can do 90 down the highway. And it's just,
well, you know, I've had my beef with Sergio's style and his over-promising, but I hope for everybody concerned in this region that they do well. And people think I have it out for Chrysler, but I don't. I'm not a big Sergio fan, but I hope they do well, because it means a lot to all the people who work out.
The 500 will be another interesting story in the coming year.
Well, the first on the block people will get the 500. Then what?
There are two distinct paths it can go down. They want it, of course, to go down the Mini path, but it could also go down the Smart path. So
It's not an automatic.
No, it is certainly not. And you know, the more people that actually seen it, and because we all have friends who work for Chrysler, I've seen it on the roads around here. It is a small car. It is a very
small car. You know, it looked fine in Paris.
Right,
but it's a car.
It is
the smart car is not a car in the same way that the Fiat is.
Yeah.
And have you driven the 500, Scott?
I've driven it in a couple of different places at different times, and
how'd you find it?
I like it.
Yeah.
You know, it's got zip. It's got that. It feels more like a Mini than it does.
Oh, good. That'll help them.
Yeah, because the smart car is just not
it's
like
not
a Mini.
It's not a pleasurable driving experience. Yeah. I found. the smart car.
You're going to get 1,000 emails now.
I know.
Well, the smart car.
The transmission I had.
The Achilles heel is the transmission.
That's mostly what I'm talking about.
We're going to take another break. Thanks to another sponsor, Hyundai Sonata. We've all talked about the Sonata. It's hard to deny that car's emergence in that segment. Tremendous. So, you know, it's a worthy competitor. Check it out, HyundaiSonata.com. And before we get into rapid fire, we should talk about some upcoming shows. Next week's guest is Kamatni Rollins, president and publisher of Automotive Rhythms, which focuses on lifestyle automotive media. Kamatni is based in Washington and has a great read on what young consumers think about cars. And that's probably a problem because they don't think about cars. They think more about their cell phones or their devices. Then on the 23rd, it will be the first annual After Hours Christmas show, where John, David Welch, and I will be giving away presents or lumps of coal to our favorites or not-so-favorites in the 2010 auto industry. So that should be
That'll
fun.
That'll be good.
And then after the holiday break, and this is big, folks, we'll get the new year started off right with Maximum Bob Lutz. Yes, the man himself will be here in our studio on January 6th. So we've got a lot of good things coming up. So, Ben, are we ready? Yes, we are. Oh, boy. These newfangled devices. Okay. Rumblestrip wants to know, can you explain how Buick has turned over most of their lineup in the last 18 to 24 months, and yet Cadillac still only has the CTS and SRX redone? Shouldn't Cadillac be out front with redoing their entire lineup?
You know, this is always the Achilles heel of General Motors. They put the money into the lowest volume division and leave the bigger volume divisions wanting. I think what drives the Buick decision, though, is China. These are cars for China, some of them designed in China.
Yeah, and that's where they're making all the money.
And that's where GM is making its money. As we all know, GM sells more cars now outside the United States than it does inside the United States. So China is a huge growth vehicle, and Buick is their growth car there.
I concur.
Good. Phil in Burlington says, as someone who has watched every episode of Autoline After Hours from its start, I wanted to tell you I find Keith Naughton to be very knowledgeable and well-spoken, and I hope that he can become a regular guest. Aw, isn't that nice, Keith?
Thank you.
This is from Alan. The EPA said the Leaf gets 99 miles per gallon equivalent and can go 71 miles on a charge. This is the equivalent of a 3-quart gas tank. Filling it must be equivalent to using a small needle, as it takes 8 hours to refill those 3 quarts. Tell me again why Gohm thinks this is competitive.
I think the argument from Gohm is that it's a city car, right? It's not a distance car.
Yeah, I mean, he hasn't made quite that distinction. He thinks it's going to be everywhere. But reality is, all electric is for urban centers.
Right.
And to think otherwise is just stupid. If you have pure electric, you're talking an urban car.
Right. The counter argument there, though, is how do they charge those things in urban environments where a garage costs more than a car and where parking meters do not yet have plugs? There's the problem with that scenario.
I concur.
Ben, let's do a phone call. Pick one.
This is Mark from Lapeer, Michigan. How does GM expect to sell cars when they close up 3 of their total dealerships in Lapeer, Michigan? If you have time, please take a trip to Lapeer and look at the empty car lots and what GM has done to Lapeer. A lot of people won't drive to other cities to buy a GM model. Again, how do they expect cars when they don't have dealerships in medium-sized cities? Thank you.
Well, I would say that GM privately would admit that they overreacted and cut too many dealers out. You'll never get them to say that, but I bet you privately they think because they decimated the small town connection to GM to small town America. I mean, decimated it. So that caller is right. You know, people like in Lapeer or anywhere else, and the GM dealer's gone, and gee, will they make an effort to drive 20 minutes to find the other GM dealer?
Because I'm betting there are still other car dealers in Lapeer.
Yeah, there's too many other distractions. Oh, I'm going to go check out Ford. You know, they didn't take the money.
And they didn't leave town.
Yeah, and they didn't leave town. Or I'm going to go down to the Chrysler showroom and, you know.
The Lee Iacocca interview that was in your paper, wasn't it, Scott? That was one of the things he mentioned. They went too far in closing dealers.
Yes,
both
it did.
Chrysler and
GM. And it's really going to, you're really going to see the impact on pickup truck sales.
Mm.
Because that's where those trucks
and
are
that's
sold.
Where Ford is just, you know. Ben, let's do another call.
Yeah, does that mean our time is up?
Yeah, that's the rapid fire part.
I heard that countdown clock.
Hi, Peter. This is Rick from San Diego. Two questions. One, the Buick Verano, which they have tentative pricing out there, 21 to 26,000, I believe. The 2.4-liter engine, how do you think that's going to stack up against the Cruze, Elantra, and Focuses of the world? And secondly, when the new Malibu comes out, do you think Chevy will ever get around to getting the feature price fixed? Because they've been looking at it for a couple people, and that is a lousy value compared to the Sonata and the Ford Fusion. Any comments? Thanks.
That could explain why the Malibu isn't doing so well, actually, because it is a fine car. And has really kind of stalled.
Well, it's a fine car, but, you know, it's funny. GM eliminated almost half their company.
Mm-hmm.
The old complaint about GM, when they spent money on one division, one of their other divisions suffered. Now they're down to four, and they're still doing that.
They need to be careful with the Malibu. I think the Malibu was one of the vehicles that helped really set the tone for GM's product revival.
You're right.
And it may have gotten lost in the wash through the bankruptcy, but that's a really important car, and they need to really stay focused and make sure that when the new one comes out.
Well, what happened is they did do a fine job. It is a fine car, but they said, okay, we did that. We got to put some more fires out here. Now, the key is the next generation Malibu.
Right.
That's the key. Now, as far as Buick with the Verano, I don't see Buick selling small cars here or smaller cars. I would go the other way with Buick. I'd want a beautiful Riviera something. I don't need a Verano Buick. I need very stylish, beautiful Buicks.
And that's what they want in China, too.
That's what they want in China. So
not small. Big.
That's a push for younger buyers is what the Verano is.
Yeah, I know, but...
But if you can't fit your Walker in it...
You know, I think younger buyers would... I still like the wow factor. When you see something really cool going down the road, just, wow, what is that?
I think younger buyers will want that Sonic,
yeah,
won't they? Isn't that what Chevy's for?
Well, it's been like that forever, since the car business. Yeah, when you're a young kid and you see something you like, you can't afford it, but you still go, wow, and it sticks in your head.
Right.
That will never change, so... GM needs to be careful with Buick. Ben, let's do another call.
Hey, guys. This is John from Atlanta. I was thinking over the holidays, since Thanksgiving, how thankful that I am that you're excited to go into a domestic car dealership and see that there's actually cars worth looking at and driving. I think back just a couple years ago, it was nothing but trucks. I just want to see how you guys feel about the change that Detroit's made back to cars and how you guys feel about it. Thanks. Bye.
This has been a year of a car. This has been a lot of really nice cars have come out this year. The Cruze, we're getting ready for the Focus, which is going to be a big car to come out. There's been high mileage cars. There's been performance cars. I mean, we just took a look at the Camaro convertible.
Yeah.
the fact that GM, the Camaro, outsold the Mustang is a big deal this year.
And that we're even talking about that.
Yeah.
There's a muscle car war going on in the year 2010.
And it's exciting. I mean, it's even those little midsize crossovers have been pretty exciting vehicles that have been coming out. And I know that for me, a midsize crossover is a 5-passenger one. Right. But the new Edge, it's finally done. The first Edge was not complete. This one is really nice. The Mustang powertrains, that's a really big deal. And I agree. I think that you can go to just about anybody's dealership and see some really top-notch cars.
And Fiesta is another example.
Fiesta is an excellent one.
Here's a little subcompact, something Ford hadn't even sold in 15 years. And it's stylish and attractive, particularly the hatchback. And people want it.
Okay, I'm going to race through a few of these. A comment from Max. Using a letter grade, how would each of you rate Chrysler's performance on the launch of Ram as a separate brand? Max, we're going to do that. That's another show. Because that's going to take longer than what we have. George from Brooklyn, what does the panel think of the revival of Di Tommaso? I will answer for them, not much.
This is rapid fire.
Scott, was McDonald's closed today? Yes. Peter, how's your S4? I love my S4. It's awesome. Best drivetrain combination day in, day out that I've yet to experience in a car. Another comment, if there were no Clios, well, there are no Clios, would ad guys push so hard to do Super Bowl ads? Yes, because it's kind of, when you're in the ad biz, that's what you like to do. You want to be on the biggest stage, and you want people to talk about your stuff.
It's the Super Bowl of advertising.
Yeah, it's the Super Bowl of advertising. It's human nature. Jim Haynes asked, should we assume that Jensen Button hired the muggers for Bernie after Bernie shot his mouth off about the Brazilian carjacking attempt? Yes, if you're an F1 fan, yeah, I agree. GM10 says, happy winter and greetings from Little Five Points in the ATL. Hey, guys, other than your websites, which are excellent, what are your favorite websites? Do you ever visit some of the more rankers ones like GM Inside News, Allpar, and Ford Inside News? If so, what do you think about them? My favorite website is bringatrailer.com. Check it out. It's absolutely fabulous. Have you ever seen that? Bring a Trailer.
No, I haven't been to that one.
Bring a Trailer is very unique. It's basically car guys, enthusiasts who go around the internet finding cool cars for sale and writing about them. And Bring a Trailer actually is a conduit for some of the cars, or they point out other interesting cars. And it's addictive. Caution. If you go to bringatrailer.com, it's addictive. You'll find yourself at 3 in the morning. One more car I got to look at. Joseph says, I flew from California to Florida yesterday and spent the flight listening to old Autolines. What a fantastic show. Now that Autoline is on TV, do you have to make it exactly 1 hour? I think the pre-show and post-show are the best part. We agree. But, you know, some of these guys here are here for 12 hours when we do this show. So, yeah, we would like to do it longer, but it's just, you know, we can only do so much. Second question. The service that picks me up at the airport uses town cars. With the simultaneous death of the Lincoln Town Car, Mercury Marquis, and Cadillac DeVille, isn't there a market for people who need a big trunk? Yes, and you will see Ford using the MKT as the new airport go-to vehicle, a little stretched wheelbase, and actually that's a really good idea because that's going to be comfortable.
And that car needs sales volume.
Yeah. Andrew in Sydney, Australia, with all the rumors of a rear-wheel drive Chevy and a new Cadillac large car above the XTS, do you think GM has finally noticed the rear-wheel drive Zeta and Sigma platforms get 2 to 3 miles per gallon better than the front-wheel drive Epsilon with almost no penalty for all-wheel drive? Yes. They have noticed that. Blah, blah, blah. Glenn wants to know, there's been so much talk about the technology being implemented in cars, e.g. infotainment stop start, direct injection. I'm a truck guy and would like to know if manufacturers plan on bringing any of this technology to full size trucks.
Yes, they are.
Stop start, definitely.
I heard Chevy is planning on redesigning the Silverado, Suburban, Tahoe around 2013. Any insight on the styling and technology we may see to compete? You know, they'll be competitive, you know that, with whatever Ford's doing. Comment from Chim: with GM selling over 15,000 Equinox a month, is GM underplanning demand of sub-Equinox Gamma CUV by just having Orion plant for production? No, because the sub-Equinox, that's a different animal.
Equinox is doing great, though.
Yeah.
It had a great month last month.
Joseph asks, I listened to an interview with Peter Miles at BMW North America. He said, now that the X3 is U.S. built, factory orders can be built and delivered to the customer in 2 weeks. Great. Why isn't that kind of innovation, not in the product, but the customer experience coming from the other automakers? Saturn did it. Well, Saturn didn't do two-week delivery.
But you can demand just about any car be made for you.
Right. Right. Even if it's a... Yeah, you can. Especially, go to the Porsche option list if you want to spend a lot of money.
A la carte.
Yeah. Jason Giados asks, your thoughts on racing being promoted by stripper version Reed sub-25,000 pony cars for the younger generation? It seems my friends won't touch them due to price, the V8, as they are still paying off college loans, etc. I know the companies would have to sell them at a loss at that price, but a racing jumpstart may be worth it in the long run as we move up on the food chain. Any comments on that?
I agree.
I do, too. George in Ohio. Hi, can Peter tell viewers anything about the next Corvette? I read today in the latest Motor Trend that GM has picked the body style to be used. Yeah, we talked about this a couple of weeks ago. The body's locked in. It's spectacular. It's basically the same car. Dimensions, slightly smaller, a little lighter, much, much nicer interior. No excuses, no complaints about the interior. So,
powertrains?
Similar powertrains, but I still think they're going to spring a surprise on us.
I think so, too.
So, comment from guest, just how will specialty manufacturers pass the 2016 CAFE rules? They have a lot of loopholes. And,
yeah.
If you're below a certain amount, they can basically do what they want. This is another show, JDP Shooter, but it's a good question. Could you please explain how the EPA obtained its current regulatory powers where they can now change tailpipe emission standards at the drop of a hat? It's a good question, but it's another show. Follow-up, will the new Republican Congress be able to change EPA's power? That's another show.
But, you know, this whole push to get to 62 miles to the gallon, that discussion is going to change.
Yes, that will change.
In the new Congress.
Jerry asks, with the demise of the Hummer, can Jeep claim the copyright to its grill? No, Jeep and Hummer already went to court with that.
They did. They settled.
And they settled.
But now Jeep really doesn't have to worry about it anymore, except in China.
Gary Emling says, have you seen the Fortune magazine Business Person of the Year poll? Ford's Alan Mulally has beaten some pretty heavy hitters in the prelims and is up against Steven Jobs in the final round.
It's already over. He won. And he destroyed Jobs. It was like 92%.
Alan's the man.
And he also won another one recently, Market Watch. They did the same thing. He beat Buffett before he beat Jobs. Just saying, as he would say.
Jim Haynes asks, how long before Bob King starts really stirring it up with the automakers.
That's another couple of shows.
Yeah.
We had a story on that.
I wrote about Bob King this week.
Profit sharing is going to be a big
thing. Profit sharing is a big thing. But
they're going to redo that formula, and so workers don't just get a couple hundred bucks when companies make billions.
They're going to try to redo that formula to prevent strikes and sending this business back to the Stone Age. I hope they succeed.
Well, that's the only way you keep the costs constant, is you do this sort of incentive-based pay. CEOs are very familiar with it.
Okay. Well, Ben, let's do one more phone call, and then I think we're going to wrap it up.
Hey, guys. This is Frank from Bridgeton, New Jersey. I wanted to get your take on what I think is GM's latest fiasco. I'm sure you've heard that they are reintroducing Cadillac to Europe again, and they're planning on taking the SRX and the CTS, two cars that are not available with diesel engines, not going to be available in right-hand drive, so that pretty much eliminates Britain, the one of the few places in maybe Sweden that actually likes American things. They don't have a compact luxury car to compete in the 3 Series C-Class segment. They don't have a compact or C-segment luxury vehicle, which is the fastest-growing segment in Europe, to compete with the A3, A1, et cetera. And, you know, on top of all of that, at best, they're what, the fourth or fifth best-selling luxury brand in the United States. So even us Americans don't buy Cadillacs over the other brands. And Lexus, for instance, has been in Europe for going on 10 years, and they can't make a dent. I just don't understand some of the logic that goes on with thinking that, well, the fifth time, or is it the sixth time, whatever it is, that we're going to introduce Cadillac, it'll work this time. Can you guys help me out here? Maybe it's just me. Thanks a lot, guys. Bye.
GM's hell-bent on making Cadillac a global luxury brand. They haven't met with a lot of success in China either with that strategy, despite their Buick success. And they like big cars in China, so it's not even a size problem. I don't know. To me, Cadillac is the quintessential American luxury car. It's not winning the sales race in its home country, which that says something, but it is American luxury, and that doesn't seem to translate very well.
They've also done a lot with... They need to do more here and raise up its level here to make, if you were to export it, people would like it then. You know, the one thing I do like that GM has done is that the new GM has set up a pretty clear plan that Cadillac is designed to go against the European, the luxury cars that are coming in. Buick is designed to go against the Asian cars.
Right.
And maybe that's the other reason why they feel like they need to have a presence in Europe with Cadillac. But I think they need to straighten out and develop things here before they go anywhere else.
I agree. I think Cadillac, you know, they've kind of been in a little bit of holding pattern. They got some great vehicles, but they need to really ramp it up now.
They do. SRX is doing well for them, though.
The CTS-V, coupe and sedan, beautiful, fast, great.
Yep.
Well, you know what, kids? I think that just about does it for tonight. You know, I want to thank you all for tuning in. Thank Mr. Keith Naughton for showing up tonight.
Thanks
you can check out Keith's work at Bloomberg.com. And I'd like to thank Scott Burgess from the Detroit News.
Thanks for having me.
You can check out Scott at DetNews.com, DetNews.com, and at Twitter.com/AutoCritic. You can visit my website at AutoExtremist.com or follow my highly infrequent tweets on Twitter.com/AutoExtremist. You can follow Autoline on Twitter at Twitter.com/Autoline. And don't forget, you can also friend Autoline on Facebook to get all kinds of content throughout the week. You can find Autoline's page at Facebook.com/AutolineDetroit. And thanks to everyone for joining us live, and we'll see you next week for another AutoLine After Hours.
Visit our website, outofline.detroit.tv, where you can watch us live Thursday nights at 7 p.m. Eastern, get your daily automotive news fix with Autoline Daily, and in-depth analysis and interviews with Autoline Detroit. That's all there, and much more, at outofline.detroit.tv.
Autoline After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone, passion for excellence. Chevrolet, the all-new Chevrolet Cruze. Get used to more. Dow Automotive Systems, improving durability and increasing design flexibility with Betamate structural adhesives at DowBetamate.com. And by Hyundai. Experience the 2011 Hyundai Sonata today at HyundaiSonata.com.